So even DNFs can serve a really good purpose, and I feel like, you know, you need to have some DNFs in life.
Diz Runs Radio episode 465 starts in 3, 2. Welcome back to Diz Runs Radio, where I talk with runners from all corners of the running world about running, life, and everything in between. I'm your host, Denny Cray, and it's just about time to head out the door for an easy run and a great conversation. So if you're ready, then I'm ready. Let's get started. Hey guys, real quick before we dive into today's episode of the show, just want to give a little shout out and a little thanks to the good folks from Ultra for sponsoring today's episode of the show. If you head over to dizruns.com/ultra, you can check out all of the different makes and models of shoes that they have available, and maybe even find some good ones still on clearance as new models continue to roll out, new updates, things like that. The old ones always go on sale, and so you can always find those there at dizruns.com/ultra, and if you use that link, it throws a little credit back my way for sending you to see them. So thanks for the folks from Ultra for sponsoring the show. We'll talk about them a little bit more as we get going today. But for now, sit back, relax, and enjoy today's episode of the show. Hey guys, today we are reconnecting with Andy Farina, who made his initial appearance on the show just over a year ago in episode 306. In case you missed that episode, I would definitely encourage you to go back into the archives and check it out. We talked about a whole host of things, from the fact that at birth, doctors thought he might not ever be able to walk, let alone run, and obviously he overcame that. But there was even another kind of hurdle in the middle there where, you know, for about 18 years in the prime of his running career, he was unable to run. So we talked about kind of overcoming all of those things, and how once he found his way back to the sport, He's gone on to obviously run a bunch of races, up to and including several different ultra marathon distance races. And when we talked last time, Andy was also kind of in the midst of training for his first 100 miler. So, and then on the opposite of the running front, or on other areas, we also talked about mental strength and kind of that grit and how that, you know, helps obviously in running and other areas of life, and the power of mantras, which was something that I hadn't thought of much before our chat, but I've definitely used since then. So lots of good things, lots of good nuggets and jewels and whatnot to go back in the archives and check those out if you haven't done so already. And honestly, even if you were around a year ago and listened to the episode, I would encourage you to check it out again. But anyway, I'm excited to reconnect with Andy today, catch up on how things have been in the last year and maybe what's going on in the future as well. So without any further ado, it is a pleasure to welcome Mr. Andy Farina back to the show. Thanks for joining us for a little round two action today, Andy. Appreciate it.
Hey, thanks so much, Denny. What a great intro. You covered a lot of ground.
Well, we covered a lot of ground. That was certainly the Cliff's Notes version. And again, guys, if you want to check out the show notes, the link is there to listen to the episode right on the website. Dizruns.com/306 will take you there. And since 306 is within the realm of most podcast app things, you can actually find that one still on your feed. If you just scroll down through the feed to episode 306 from September of 2016, you'll find that episode. And again, would certainly encourage you to check it out. If you want to catch up with Andy and some of the things he's got going on online, social media, things of that nature, fearlesshealthcoaching.com is the website. And on the Twitter, the handle is at Andy Farina, just his name, A-N-D-Y-F-A-R-I-N-A. On the Instagram, it's at second half Andy, and that's 2-N-D, so second underscore half written out, H-A-L-F. Underscore Andy. So a little bit of a tongue tire there. And on the Facebook, it's just Andy Farina. If you're doing the browser, it's andy.farina and then the number 2. But as always, we'll have the links to all those places. So all you got to do for this one is remember 465. That's the episode 465. Dizruns.com/465 will take you right to the show notes. We'll have all those things linked up. And anything else we talk about today that makes sense to link to, we'll have them linked there as well. So Andy, the way we would start the show, I mean, you probably remember this. It's been a year, so I am excited to see if maybe the answer has changed a little bit. If it's the same, then I'm going to throw a little curveball at you. But the way we started off the show then and now, still the same way. What is your favorite distance to race and why?
You would think that'd be a very easy question. But run long, my friend. I like to run long. So I don't, you know, anything that's long, you know, I love trail running. So anything above a marathon, I tend to like the longer distances, even like 50 and above. But I love a good 50K. So That's not a very good answer, but just all I could say is run long, my friend. That's what I love.
Gotcha. And you saved yourself, because I was going to have to ask the clarifying question of what long means to you, because long, you know, for some people, a 5K is considered a long race. So I'm glad that you put on at least anything longer than a marathon. So you're an ultra distance guy.
Yeah. And I think you say it very well, that it just all depends on the person. I tend to be an endurance guy. You ask, why do I like the long ones? Because like, it's like multiple races in one day, and it's a lot of head games, and I like getting into the whole mental aspect of it. Coming from an engineering background, I like the whole analytical back, you know, getting into it analytically from a fueling standpoint, which is crucial when you get into the longer distances. And it's just fun kind of covering a lot of different ground and a lot of different terrain. It's just cool. It's like just an adventure, and you're just out there on your feet and you're just doing cool stuff.
Yeah, definitely agree. Although I'm not quite ready to say that, you know, the super, super long is my thing yet. Since we've last talked, I have crossed, you know, one ultra marathon off of my list. So I'm officially, you know, in that crazy boat of all of the ultra distance folks, but 50K or about is enough for me at this point. But you mentioned the analytical side of things, and I'd be curious to dive into that just a little bit. You know, in my experience, running whatever the distance, I mean, even some of the shorter stuff sometimes is almost as much or more variables that can come up, you know, and obviously the longer you go, the more variables that can come into play. So being kind of analytical, being somebody who, you know, it sounds like kind of likes to really have things planned out and you know, check this box and move on to the next one and on to the next one. How much of that can you really do over the course of a long distance race because of all the variables that can crop up, from weather to terrain to how you're feeling to nutrition to, you know, insert all, you know, a dozen other options there. So, you know, I guess the simple way to ask it, how analytical are ultra distance races in your opinion?
That's a great question. I think, you know, part of it, you have to analyze well, meaning your fueling, I think, is a key thing. Mm-hmm. I've seen many a good runner drop from a race just because he, and it's funny now that I think about it, it was always guys, they just mishandled their fueling, and they crashed near the end of the race. They cramped up really bad and didn't feel that they could continue and stuff. And so I think calculating your fueling and testing it and making sure you're well prepared for how much fluid you're going to need depending on the climate, the weather, you know, your intensity of running, how many calories and what kind of calories you're going to need and what your body responds well to and what it doesn't respond well to. And all that has to be carefully tested while you're training, because you don't want any surprises on race day. So not only that, your nutrition as an athlete, when you get into the 50 miles and above, you know, from my perspective, you know, your nutrition really matters, because, you know, how you're going into the race and, you know, your immune system, your, you know, just your overall health and well-being, you know, is so impacted by how you eat day to day, that I think that's also very necessary and positive. Really makes a difference in your abilities. Not being a very gifted athlete, you know, personally, just naturally, and also being an older athlete, you know, being in my mid-50s, you know, I always joke and say, you know, I need every edge I can get. So from that standpoint, I really calculate my nutrition very, very intensely. But on the other end of the spectrum, you know, when you're running for 24 hours, say in 100 miler or so, so much can change over that time. So you also have to be very flexible and kind of really be aware of how you're feeling and what you're feeling, and then to know what you're going to do about it. And that happened in the second 100-mile race I did this past year. The temperature at race start was a beautiful, like for here in Florida, was in the 40s.
Oh, wow. You know, that's nice.
Yeah, it was just gorgeous. And so we're running and we're having a good time. And then all of a sudden, next thing I know, It's in the 80s. And I realized that I didn't hydrate well when it was really cool. And we were exposed to sun a lot on the course. And so I had gotten dehydrated. And so I had, you know, that's really dangerous in those long races. Not from, I wasn't so much, I mean, it could be a health issue, but I was more dangerous in the sense where, man, I don't want to drop. You know, I don't want to get so dehydrated where I can't physically press forward. So I had to recalculate and start, you know, really working on my hydration. And there was jokes because my buddy said, you would have came. I didn't run a great race. I was really beat up, but I finished the 100 mile. But my buddy was joking and he was saying, man, you would have came in first if you would have had all the time back from all the times you had to stop and go to the bathroom. So, you know, it's different things like that where you can calculate to a certain point, but then you have to be flexible and deal with how your body responds, because your body can do crazy things over those long distances. And then you have to kind of, you know, like the spaceships do, you have to kind of course correct as you go. Mm-hmm. So that's where I see it as. So you're calculating in advance, and you're often calculating on the fly because you're course correcting.
Right. Is that something that, and maybe, you know, it, both including, you know, your perspective and from things that you've seen with others, how difficult is that to do? Is that, I feel like, you know, I'm hearing you and in my mind, because I'm kind of the opposite of the super analytical. I have a little bit of analytical in me, but I'm pretty laissez-faire about a lot of things. I just kind of, you know, not completely just figured out as I go. Like, I have my plan, but, like, you know, I know things are going to change. So I don't worry too much about having a set plan, because there is going to be so many variables at play. Do you find it difficult to shift from, all right, here is the plan, but then, you know, especially if there's a big course correction, like, you know, when you've said, you know, like when you said you noticed you were definitely in a dehydrated state and it could cause problems. That's a pretty big course correction, instead of just a few extra ounces here or there, a few extra calories here or there. is that difficult, or is for you at least kind of come something that you're comfortable with doing?
Well, you know, you bring up a great point. My ultra buddy, one of the guys I race and run with often, he's exactly like you. I mean, he just kind of shows up and half the time doesn't have a plan, and he does well, you know? So one thing I'm learning through all this is we all run out of who we are. You know, you can't be something you're not. My personality is very analytical. I run out of that. His personality is not so much. You know, I tease him and say, you'd probably do better if you had a little, you know, followed a few principles at least. I don't expect you to be, you know, totally like me, but we laugh about it together, and he goes, yeah, maybe one day. For me, analyzing comes very naturally, because, you know, that's the way, that's a strong point for me. I was trained that way as an engineer, and I kind of like, that's fun for me, analyzing things. Plus, I'm a very voracious researcher. And so being able to analyze and course correct has a lot to do with the what I want to call the truth base that you've developed. So when issues, you know, come up, I can quickly categorically jump into, you know, facts and principles and things I've researched for years and take a good look at it and say, okay, what's the plan? So that comes kind of natural for me, even, you know, which is a good thing. The bad thing is when I don't have a plan, I can get a little disoriented, and where some people will just kind of intuitively feel it out, which is great. You know, I have to kind of then go into, okay, let's calm down, calm myself and say, okay, I don't have a plan here. So what am I feeling? What would be the next step? And then I go into intuition mode at that point and press forward. So I think the same thing would be true, like with you. You would probably lean a lot more on intuition at first. And then, you know, as you gain more experience in an area, that's what feeds intuition. When you are more knowledgeable and experienced about a specific topic or area of life, skill set, it is a lot easier to intuitively get it right, it's not like just magic where you're just pulling things out of the air. Mm-hmm. You're still leaning on your own experience / truth base, in my opinion. And so that's why I think it's important to have good information, not just everything that's floating all over the internet, but, you know, reputable researchers whose business and reputation depends on their quality of research. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, building those facts into your thought processes. And then when the time comes, you can just run through it and plan it out. So I don't know. I think that sounded pretty engineer-y to me, but that's kind of how I do it. So
Gotcha. How many different contingency plans? It sounds like that's kind of like what you have a couple of different options, or at least in the back of your mind, maybe have some contingency plans. Do you go into races with a lot, or for example, you know, there's not only obviously the fluid, the nutrition, if there's some terrain issue that you weren't prepared for, or heaven forbid, an injury that you weren't prepared for. I mean, how much time do you spend before the race coming up with, all right, if this, then that type of scenarios?
Yeah, great question. Gosh. My personality is very endless possibilities. So besides driving my wife crazy, I can overdo it. So I try to keep a very simple plan. I do have several contingencies usually, and that usually manifests itself, which I learned from my special forces buddies. You know, take care of your gear and your gear will take care of you. I usually make sure I have essential gear with me. I don't rely on aid stations. Mm-hmm. I deeply appreciate them and I use them, but I can typically make it through most ultras without them. Not a 100-miler, I can tell you that much, but you just run out. But I do. So I do carry a little bit of extra stuff with me, and I don't mind. I usually make sure my gear is well planned out. I make sure my fuel, and meaning my both my hydration and food, is well planned out, and I carry it with me or I have it in drop bags. And other than that, and I make sure my shoes are good. Other than that, you know, the gun goes off, just keep putting one foot in front of the other, and that's where, you know, mental grit or mental toughness for me kicks in. Mm-hmm. Then it's like, okay, there's no way I'm quitting no matter what happens. And that's my mindset. I'm going to cross that finish line. However, I do have a story to tell if you're interested. My first DNF ever.
Yes, I was going to want, I think, to get to that, because I think I know that was, if we're on the same wavelength, that was the first attempt at the 100-miler, which was shortly after we talked last year.
Yes, it was. That
let's go with it then. Let's strike while the iron's hot. You brought it up. Let's dive into that. So we talked about a year ago, and you were, if memory serves, from going back and refreshing myself earlier this morning, a couple of months or so by the time we talked till the race was happening, you were excited, a little nervous, but you know, I mean, first 100-miler, it's the typical emotions that you might have. So what happened? Lead us up to it. What happened with the DNF and all things considered in that first 100-miler?
Yes. Well, that when it first happened, I didn't like it at all. But as I look back on it, I deeply appreciate the whole experience, because it was a great learning experience and a very enjoyable experience overall. But essentially what happened, so we talked in September, the race was in early November. So 2 months later, it was the Pinhoti 100, the Alabama, section of the Pinhoti Trail. You know, great race. I highly recommend it. So I'm all fired up. It's my first 100. You know, I've got all these visions of grandeur, and not because I think I'm so great, but I'm just kind of optimistic and ambitious. And, you know, I'm going to go out there and do all this great stuff. And in the first mile of the race, I have a bad right ankle that I've been rehabilitating for a while. Two or 3 weeks before the Pinhoti 100, I ran a 25K just as a warm up, and I rolled that bad ankle. So it was tweaked going into the 100 miler, but I thought, okay, that's all right. I'll work with it. It feels pretty good. No big deal. So the race gun starts. We take off, and in mile one, I roll that ankle really bad. And so I'm sitting there, you know, I actually had to stop for a second and kind of hobble out of the way because I was up towards the front of the pack and I didn't want to slow up, you know, the other runners. And, you know, it was bad. And so I'm like, dang, this is my one of 100 miles. So I just kicked into what I normally do. I was like, you know, one foot in front of the other. That's it. Mantra kicked in, you know, press ahead, one foot in front of the other. So it takes about 5 or 10 minutes to kind of shake off the, you know, the pain and wobbliness of that ankle. And no lie, I rolled it 4 more times in the first, you know, 17 or 18 miles. So it was bad. And each time I rolled it, it took about 10 or 15 minutes to recover to where I'd be hobbling on it as I go. So I got to mile 18 and I saw my crew and I said, man, I'm in trouble. This ankle's bad, but I believe I can press forward. I need to press forward. So I just press forward. Now I'm hobbling a lot. So my left leg, the opposite leg of the ankle that's injured, is taking quite a beating. I get to mile 42 and I'm actually on pace to what I had planned out. So I was able to keep pace even with stopping and recovering every time I rolled that ankle and stuff like that. And finally, but at mile 42, you had to do a bunch of bouldering. And so I'm jumping down rocks on one leg and it's really slow. And basically at mile 69, I didn't make the cutoff. And got pulled from the race. So I was able to meet my mental goal of not quitting,
right?
Even though it was extremely brutal. It was a good mental training day, that's for sure. But, you know, I missed the cutoff on mile 69, I think by maybe 45 minutes or something like that, which was really disappointing. I would have pressed ahead, but I would have not have finished. I mean, I was getting slower and my left leg was giving out because it was compensating so much and my right ankle hurt and I just was just moving very poorly. So it was sad for me, you know, because I didn't finish the goal. And, you know, for someone who was never supposed to walk and who could only run a mile, you know, 8 years ago and it took a week to recover, I was so close to meeting a dream that, and to see it go bye-bye, you know, in that way was a tough pill to swallow. But part of mental toughness is emotional resiliency, which means, you know, getting back up every time you get knocked down. And so one of my life mantras is fall down 7, get up 8. So I was like, well, you know, I failed. It's okay. You know, I still ran a pretty solid race considering the situation. It was good mental training. I had a great experience with my son. He was one of my safety runners with some friends. So it was a great day, and I have very fond memories of that day and memories I wouldn't switch. But then after that now, you know, I missed my opportunity to qualify for the lottery for Western States. So that was another disappointment. Well, I don't remember when it was, but about a week or two later, I was pretty beat up and my ankle was really kind of messed up and I could, you know, was on crutches and things like that. And my wife wasn't too excited about the whole 100-mile thing now because she saw how beat up I was. But a friend of mine told me about a 100-mile that was coming up in like less than 3 months later locally here in Florida. And I thought, man, I'm pretty beat up here. I wasn't expecting, you know, to have to turn around and give another shot at 100-mile. And also I didn't know if my ankle was going to heal up. But I thought, gosh, it's in my backyard. I've got to go for it. And so to make a long story pseudo short, you know, I was able to recover. I was able to get my ankle stabilized and ended up completing the dream less than 3 months later and finishing my dream of finishing that 100 miler. And though it wasn't in the mountains, it was challenging in other ways. And it was a good day, great memories with my wife and great friends. And so I am just so grateful for both those races. And I probably don't tell my wife, I probably would have said my favorite distances are 100 miles, but she's not too psyched on me running those right now. So I'm kind of being nice and just chilling and doing, 50 milers and 100 Ks and things like that for now.
Right. Those races that you can get done in a day as opposed to, like a sun up to sundown type of day as opposed to a 24 hour day.
Yeah, exactly. So that's the story. So even DNFs can serve a really good purpose. And I feel like, you need to have some DNFs in life. There's mm-hmm. it's just part of the process. If you're not, pushing yourself to where you could be. You're not testing your limits. And so my limits got really tested that day, and I just was unable to overcome my physical limitations, no matter how mentally strong I was. I just could not make my legs and feet and ankles move fast enough to finish that race. And that was a good thing for me. Mm-hmm. That was helpful in the long run. Painful in the short term, but helpful in the long run.
Right. And that's the thing that is sticking out to me from this story right here is that exactly what you said there, like in the short term, it's not a whole lot of fun. And I had seen something on, and I posted it as well on Instagram just the other day, there was something along the lines of, one of those quote card things. It's like, if not for the rainy days, you wouldn't appreciate the sunshine. If not for the whatever, you wouldn't appreciate the good thing. The bad side of the coin, you wouldn't appreciate the good side of the coin. And for somebody like yourself who, again, from our first chat and even, you've mentioned it a few times so far today, you are a mentally strong, your grit quotient is high.
Thank you.
I still have to imagine that coming off of that first race, the DNF, there had to be some, I don't want to say doubts, but I mean, that had to be a struggle, even though, even with somebody who is as mentally strong as you are. I mean, yeah. what was the emotion like? I mean, you kind of touched on it a little bit, but can we dive a little deeper there on just how difficult that process was for you?
Again, you're just good at interviewing, Danny. I really enjoy it because you peg things. You called it right. I came out. I mean, this is my my first DNF. I've had a dream for years to get into Western States, which may be swinging for the fences for an athlete like me because that's really, it's the toughest ultra in America to get into. And, it's a lottery thing and you don't have many chances. And so I was really counting on finishing that first race. And I just believed I was going to, and it didn't happen. And I was really beat up. I trained really hard for that Pinhoti 100. And so when it didn't happen, I had some definite doubts. I mean, the first thought was, oh, let's just forget about this Western States thing. I don't have any business in that race. I'm not nearly as good a runner as all these other runners. All the negative self-talk, what I call your shame attendant. Everybody's got one that, the second things don't go the way you want, or you do something that you feel like you're a little embarrassed by, your little shame attendant starts talking to you and saying, see, there's something wrong with you. You're just being arrogant. There's no way you should try to do 100 miles. And I came out of Pinhoti thinking, man, what am I doing even trying to do 100 milers? I mean, gosh, I couldn't run a mile 8 years ago. And, I should be happy with 50 Ks and 50 milers. And then my wife's saying the same thing. She's like, why don't you stick to the day races? And, those work well for you and blah, blah, blah. Because she saw everything I went into through the training and I have a big family. I have 5 kids and I'm there for them. I'm there for her. I have work and everything else. And so she's like, why are you doing this? And so then I had voices around me, that were questioning things and I was really struggling. But once I saw it was local, I started thinking about it. And so I was still, no lie, this is the truth. I was still, no, I'm not going to do that race at first. And it took a friend of mine, one day we were out training, and he said, Andy, you need to do that 100 miler, that local one. And he says, not only that, I will pay your registration. I want you, you need to do that race. And that was the turning point. I only had a short time to prepare. My body was really tired, really beat up, because this was weeks down after Pinhoti. So I only had a short time before this other one. So I went into the Iron Horse 100 with less than ideal conditions. I was beat up. I was tired. And the only, you know, I wasn't real confident. But again, I kicked into, you know, where I feel like God's, you know, gifted me is, okay, lots of people are counting on me to finish this race. And not, you know, I'm around a lot of people. I know a lot of people. I train a lot of people. And they're all watching my story unfold. And they're so gracious and good just in their hearts. They wanted to see me succeed at a time when I wasn't really believing I could succeed. And I just thought, I can't quit on them. And so once my friend stepped in and said that, and then other people stepped in, it was like my mental grit thing kind of kicked in again. And it was like, okay, whatever I'm going to face here, all I got to do is keep moving. And so I the first 50 miles of the Iron Horse, I felt good. I did great, but I got dehydrated and then I really struggled. The last 25 miles of that race, I was, every step was an act of the will. And I am not exaggerating. For me, I'm a very average runner in many ways. I was really beat up going into the race, and I just had to will every step for the last 25 miles. And I did. And again, I think as a gift from God, I can't claim any credit from it for it. But when I finished, one of my good buddies goes, man, you're the toughest dude I know. And that was just so encouraging. He was just beaming. And I had my other friend who set the course record for the 50 miler in that race. Great ultra runner. I mean, he was finished at 3 in the afternoon and he waited all the way till the next day for me to finish. When you have people like that surrounding you, and of course my wife was there, my 14-year-old son ran with me the last 100 yards through the finish line. When you have people like that surrounding you, you can do just so much more than you think you can. And I hope that's what people hear, is this is not about me. And dare I say, it's not even about mental toughness, even though you need that. It's also about the tribe that you have. Do you take the time to cultivate the kind of relationships with others and hold them up? And if they choose, when you're in need, will they hold you up? To me, that's what really makes life and running that much more special. To me, it's not a solo sport. It really is a tribal thing, whether people are running with you, whether people are crewing you, whether you're doing that for them, or whether they're just texting you before, during, or after the race, spurring you on. I think that's really that, and just as I always like to say, because it's true, the kindness of God, I think that's what got me through that race. Because I'm still kind of amazed I did it.
Yeah, I want to talk a little bit more about it. There's a couple things there that I want to bring back to you. But first, I want to take a second and talk about Ultra for a second. They're the pseudo sponsor for today. And guys, if you're not, since I didn't mention it in the intro today, Andy and I originally connected as we're both Ultra ambassadors. So you've heard me talk about Ultra many times, and I'm going to turn the stages over to him for just a second to you know, you all know kind of you know, why I love the shoes, why I love the brand in general. But Andy, what's you know, just a softball? Well, maybe not a softball question. Maybe it's one of those impossible questions because there's so many good choices. But what are your favorite Ultra shoes, and what do you love most about being associated with that company that I certainly enjoy and you do as well?
A great question. First of all, the thing I would like to talk about the company briefly first, then I'll tell you about my favorite shoe or shoes. The company itself, having, you know, met and talked with Golden and other people.
And Golden is the founder of the company, for those that aren't.
Yes, one of the co-founders. Yes, one of the two co-founders. And the whole company is built on helping runners run naturally better without injury. And they took a lot of risk to hold to that philosophy. So anybody that's like a pioneer, because I like to think of myself, I hope not inappropriately, as a pioneering type, you know, that's willing to put their neck on the line to live for something they believe in, I think is worth looking at. And they do. And I know the people that I know in the company have just been great people. And so that's part of the reason I really love Ultra, is just that they really care about runners and care about people. And they're not looking to make the quick buck and just go along with the crowd, but to really stick to what they believe is going to help you the most. And, you know, making foot shaped shoes, even though they were, you know, made fun of at first because they looked ugly to a lot of people, you know, and, you know, things like that. So great company. Secondly, my favorite shoe, I've run in Lone Peak since the very first version and best shoe I've ever put on my foot. With that being said, it's getting harder and harder to pick one shoe because I've run in so many different of their shoes, and literally I've loved them all except for the Olympus, any of the high stack height shoes. They don't fit me well because of my ankle. I need a low center of gravity. So I recently I've been training more in the latest Superiors, which are similar to the Lone Peaks, but they have less stack height. You know, they're lighter. And I'm going to do this. I do a 50-mile mountain race in two and a half weeks, the Georgia Jewel 50 miler. And I was just up there running in the mountains a couple weeks ago, and I was running in my Superiors. And I think I'm going to give my Superiors a try because the lower stack height is giving me a little bit more stability when I'm running. And I like the lightweight feel of them. They don't protect your feet as much.
Right.
So when you're running through the rock garden and stuff like that, you really got to watch yourself. So, you know, if you had to pin me down, I'd say Lone Peaks. If you had to say close second, that may become my first real soon, I'd say the Superiors, both trail running shoes. For road shoes, the Escalantes are the most comfortable thing I've ever put on my foot, ever. Fantastic shoe. The Ones are a great minimal training shoe. The Turin IQs, I've played around with those and I like the feedback. I run in those once a week just to see how my cadence is doing, how my foot strike is doing. I appreciate that foot feedback being analytical, of course. You know, so all the shoes, I love them, but I would go with the Lone Peak and the Superior as my favorite. As my favorite road shoe, Escalante or Ones for sure. Escalante probably, yeah.
Gotcha. As you would expect for, you know, if you ever talk to any, I mean, really probably anybody with their, you know, whatever equipment they like, whether it's shoes, whether it's other type of gear, whatever it is, you start asking about it and they go on about it for days. And there's so many good choices. I would do the same thing. I mean, if you were to ask me, I'd be like, well, gosh, you know, in this situation, I really like this shoe. And in this, you know, this one's really good. And oh my gosh, this one was always my favorite. You know, it's the same way. But guys, if you want to check out all of the things, all of the shoes and apparel and the whole nine yards, everything at Ultra, you go to dizruns.com/ultra, it'll redirect you there and get a little good vibes coming from going through that route. But definitely check them out. And if you have any questions on anything Ultra related, let myself or Andy or anybody else that you've heard on here talking about Ultra stuff know, and we'll be happy to blather on for days and days about what we like about the shoes and the company in general. So getting back to the Iron Horse a little bit, I did want to ask, although you kind of alluded to it a bit, that the last bit was really a struggle, and where I wanted to get into is, you know, I refuse to believe that for anybody, you know, 100 miles can be quote unquote easy. Like, there's always going to be some struggles. There's always going to be, I mean, shoot, like I would make a pretty firm argument that you can't even say that for, you know, for quote unquote, just a marathon, like any type of event where you're really pushing yourself. I mean, shoot, even lower than that, 10Ks, 5Ks, if you're really going hard, really pushing yourself, there's always going to be some times when it's a real struggle where you're really questioning yourself. And like you said, you know, the turnaround from the DNF race to the 100 mile that you finished wasn't a whole lot of time. There wasn't a whole lot of time for you to A, recover physically, B, probably to recover mentally as well. At the starting line, were there doubts, and were there ever any moments during the course of the race when you you really got to the point of really wondering, like, was throwing in the towel ever part of your, you know, was that ever a struggle you had to overcome?
First, Danny, I want to affirm something you said is I will have struggles in 5Ks, just different kinds of struggles, right, on speed and things like that. So I definitely don't want to make it sound like, you know, if you run longer, you know, it's harder, better, or anything like that. I think it's all relative to the runner and the person. So I want to affirm what you said and say we're all going to face struggles in all races. Very rarely does anything go as you plan. When we got pregnant with our fifth child, that became one of my mantras, is life is what happens to you while making other plans.
Right.
I'm really glad it happened. So wouldn't have it any other way. But, you know, I'm thinking back as you asked that question. There was never a time in that race when I thought – never a time – and I think this in every race. I never think about – well, I shouldn't say that. I didn't think I was going to quit. That was not an issue. I hoped that my body would hold up. And from other long events that are very arduous that I've done, I kind of have the mindset that the only way I'm stopping is if I get kicked off or carried off the course. Mm. That can be the only way I'll stop. I cannot give myself the out of quitting. Not to say that that's a good way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, hopefully by this stage of life and so on and so forth, the wisdom that comes with all my years, I hope, I would stop if it was something irresponsible or idiotic.
Right.
And I have asked that question during races, you know, at times, you know, like high ankle sprain, mile 51 of 100K, and I still have a bunch of climbing to do. And I'm like, you know, is this being irresponsible? There's people who count on me, my family. But in that race, no, never felt like I needed to quit. You know, the weather was brutal. They had more DNFs this year than in the entire 12-year history of the race. Wow. Definitely there were definite challenges, but I never felt like I wasn't going to make it. But I will say this, when I was in the 90s and I was crawling along and my body was, you know, really pushing back and I was having to will every step and I hallucinated for the first time, which was an interesting thing. I always felt like, you know, we're going to get this. I'm going to get this. And, you know, it was really good too in late in the race like that to have, you know, a safety runner with me. I wasn't alone like I've been in other races. I think it would have been that much harder if at that point when I was really struggling with pain and every step, trying to finish by yourself. It really helped to have someone there with you.
Yeah, and that relates back to what you said just before we started talking shoes about running being tribal, and you know, it is as much as it, on the surface it may look like and feel like, and even sometimes really feels like it's a solo sport. It's definitely not, and certainly in those longer distance races when you have some crews and pacers and things like that, you recognize that there's a whole lot more than just you who's racing that's going on with that. So that's I'm glad you're able to have that extra support, because it's, you know, it, not that it makes it easy, but it makes it maybe a little bit easier, a little bit more bearable to have somebody else to kind of lean on, either physically or emotionally or probably a little bit of both.
Right. Absolutely. You said it well.
Okay. All right. I'll take that. Thank you. So shifting gears a little bit, something that I know we didn't talk about before. I don't even know if it was something that was as much before. I kind of think maybe this is new, but kind of getting off of the running train just for you know, maybe as we're kind of closing down here, but shifting gears just a little bit, the Fearless Health Coaching, what is that something, again, correct me if I'm wrong, but is that kind of new? And what are you doing on the business side of your life these days?
Well, that's a good question. Fearless Health is the company I started back in 2015, February 14th exactly. And
so not as new as I thought, but certainly did something we didn't talk about before. So what do you have going on there?
Well, it's a coaching company where I coach individuals and companies in mental grit, exercise and nutrition, career and life skills. Three different areas. There's a menu of things that you can be coached in, and people pick their area of desire that they want to grow in. And I take them through processes that help them develop those areas and get them really good results. It's kept growing. And so now this past year, it's been going very strong, and I've had the privilege of seeing a lot of people accomplish a lot of great things and be a part of that journey with them. They do all the hard stuff. I'm just there cheering them on and coaching them along. And so it's been fun. So I have online nutrition coaching that's getting people great results. I have face-to-face one-on-one coaching. I do in companies. I do coaching teams. It's been a really exciting journey. I just kind of got tired of seeing good people suffer and, you know, America as a whole not being able to get to where they want to get because of, you know, whether it be fear. I saw a lot of fear being a hindrance. I saw nutrition being a lot of a hindrance. I saw relational tensions being a hindrance. I saw short-term decision-making versus long-term decision-making, possibly the single most important skill to develop for success is long-term decision-making, which takes a lot that goes into it. So I just started really helping more and more people in those areas. And then more and more people started calling. And the next thing I know, you know, I'm just booking up and I'm booking into 2018 now. I'm still taking on clients and still helping existing clients. But the whole goal is that they become independent of me. So, you know, you have a constant stream. And I'm hoping, you know, right now, I have clients in 5 different states. And it's been a great thing. It's helped me, and I've been able to hopefully be used to help them. And I want to make companies. I want to make America better. I just do. One of my life purpose mantras is to see families and communities thrive through healthy living and relating. And I tell that's what gets me out of bed a lot in the morning. So anyhow, that's it.
Awesome. What were the three kind of pillars, the three areas that are kind of the focus again?
So the Fearless Health, it says mind, body, soul. So the mind part is mental grit. Mm-hmm. The body part is nutrition first, exercise second. And the soul part is life, relationships, and career.
Gotcha. And the reason I asked that, because I'm curious, and I think I might know the answer, but I would love to hear it from you. How often do people come in thinking that they need to just address one of those areas? And how often are they so intertwined that you can't just address one area without it addressing the whole?
That's a great question. You know, we all have our areas. I mean, there's none of us. I mean, I'm learning as I go too. I like to think of it like this. You know, you've ever seen those things where they set up all the dominoes and they do a big design of them. Mm-hmm. So they knock over the first domino and then they start taking them all out. One thing I've noticed is that each of us typically has issues or areas that I call your big domino areas. And if you take out a few of those dominoes, it's amazing how it takes out a bunch of things that are, you know, takes care of a lot of good things. So what I try to do is I try to, as people sometimes just come to me and say, I want help. I want to lose weight. Boom. So we talk about that. And what they realize is it takes nutrition even more than exercise, even though I'm a big fan of exercise, absolutely necessary. But you're, and it's not just dieting or meal plans. It's much more about your habits, about your family of origin, you know, what your ethnicity, how you view food, and so on and so forth. So long answer to a short question is I give people what they want. Typically in the process, they see more of what they need, and they may need that me for that, or they may not. But at least they're aware and they can move forward. And I do habit-based coaching because I found that, you know, when you're if you don't develop things into a habit, when you're under stress, you'll default to basically your old habits. Mm-hmm. And so, and the whole myth of, you know, 30 days to form a habit, that's not necessarily true. The more complex the habit, the longer it takes. But most habits, it's about 60 to 70 days. So that, you know, that to me is what is important. So instead of focusing people on losing weight or focusing on people on getting gritty, what we do is we look at their habits and their mindsets and how they view things. And then typically I could be helping someone with nutrition and it will help them in their relationships. Hmm. Because it's knocking over other dominoes. They're seeing things about themselves as like, oh man, I'm doing the same thing with my girlfriend as I'm doing with my food, and that's not a healthy habit. So I need to apply that nutrition habit also to my relating to my girlfriend. And then they, you know, come back later, and I always joke with people and I say, you know, I'm not satisfied until your spouse or your significant other comes to me and thanks me.
That's when you know that the change is actually made.
Yeah.
So as we're getting kind of close to wrapping up here today, Andy, I would love to kind of ask my final question, still along these same lines, the mind and the body and the spirit, the soul, and focus it back towards running. You know, maybe it's kind of the same question that I just asked, but focus a little bit more on running here. But how, you know, how can we go about maybe improving ourselves as runners, or just improving ourselves in general, you know, through the medium of running, by focusing on each of these areas? So I don't know if that's a really good question, or if it's too vague, but you know, I think a lot of times runners focus maybe too much, and I'm guilty of this too, on just the physical. And you know, as we talked about last time, as I'm still continuing to work on, my mental side of running needs to improve, and it has improved, and there's still some, you know, plenty of improvement left to be made. But you know, I've learned over time that I can do all the physical training I want, but if I don't improve my mind, I still have struggles. So maybe that's a little bit better way of coming at the question, or give it a little more context. But how you know, have you experienced, either through yourself or through your coaching, ways to kind of improve the end game, improve our race performance, or our, you know, progress towards our running goals, by addressing more than just the physical component? I know we talked about nutrition a little bit earlier and how important that is, but maybe the other areas as well, the mind and the soul, or the mind and the spirit, to help us be better runners as well.
Yeah, you know, that's a great question. And I think the way I see most people operate, especially us men, we're more wired this way, is we tend to very much compartmentalize life. Mm. So when we say, I want to be a better runner, right away we say, okay, give me a training plan. I got to train. But you know, if you're not sleeping well and you're fighting with your wife and you're eating, you know, less, you know, eating poorly, mm-hmm. you know, you can have all the plans you want. You're not going to be able to train that well, which means you're not going to race that well. And I know people say, well, I don't care about racing. I'm not a competitive person, you know, and great. If that's your personality, wonderful. But I do know one thing about human beings is we enjoy that more that which we do well. And so whatever, you know, you have two choices when you're determining whether something you're doing something well or not. One is do it well, or lower the standard and trick yourself into thinking you're doing it well just so that you feel good about it. And I know that sounds a little bit harsh, but I've seen people do it over and over and over again, is they just settle for less because they, they talk themselves out of the win. You know, it's like you could do this like much better if you wanted to, but they may have certain mindset issues that they need to deal with, or they may have certain influences in their life that need to be dealt with. So we have the perspective is we're a whole person. We're not just a physical being. And, you know, no muscle moves without the mind. So the mental part of it is important. Mm-hmm. And the fact is that half our brain is totally focused on relationship and environment. And so if you don't have the right environment, and or not the right environment, like it's a performance, if you right. don't have an environment and you're not relating healthy, you know, half your brain is going to be really struggling, the right brain. Mm-hmm. And so I believe you have to develop yourself as a whole person. And then, like I said previously, you run out of who you are. You know, it's not like you can just compartmentalize it and say, all right, I'm going to just block everything out of my head and then just go train and run like some race. And to me, life is so much more enjoyable when you're, you know, your brain is wired. Why are video games so alluring? They give you lots of reward feedback in the process. And I think the same thing can be true with running. If you're getting – you show me someone who's improving, I'll show you a motivated runner. Mm-hmm. You show someone who's getting PRs, I'll show you somebody who's motivated to train. You know, and it's internal motivation. It's not me having to drag them along. I don't do a lot of dragging along. I don't think that's respectful or nice to people. I don't believe in that much – honestly, about motivation, motivation is really short term. You could be motivated right now listening to this, and tomorrow – you know, it starts raining and you're like, man, I'm not training.
Right.
You know, but inspiration, stories that are meaningful to us, that stick with us, those tend to energize us over time. And even more than that, when we start PRing and when people start sending me texts like, I'm the lightest I've been in 5 or 10 years and I'm not even focusing on my weight. You know, I'm just developing good habits and it's paying off. I feel better than I've felt in years. You know, I'm PRing right now when I haven't PR'd in years. And then I don't have to motivate them. They're already super energized and motivated. And so so I think it's very important to find your big domino areas and work on that. Yes, keep your training going. Yes, whatever it is, you know, you're doing, do it. But if you're not happy and if there's not a certain level of peace with who you are and you're, you know, the type of person you are, the being the type of person that deep down inside you really want to be, then there's things, you know, that training plans are just not going to do for you. You know, and so I think it's important to develop those things, and you can do it. And in the right environments, they can be developed, and you'll find that your training will be better than ever. Your eating will be better. You won't self-medicate as much with food and things like that. And, you know, not that there's anything wrong. I really right. enjoy food. Heck, I'm Italian. I love but so anyhow, that's my take on it. That's been my observation over the last, gosh, I've been mentoring and developing people now in one form or another for like over 30 years. And, you know, I have just seen too much to not know that, you know, I'm on the right path, that this is a good thing. And it's paid off big for me personally. It's paid off big for many loved ones. And I, what I really want is for other people to just enjoy life and share in the benefits of it. I'm not looking to make a name for myself or anything like that. I just feel like I need to pay it forward. That's what happened with me. Somebody helped me get on my feet. And I just feel like the least I can do as a human being is pay it forward. And so that's kind of my life purpose.
That's a great purpose and a great way to wrap things up. So again, guys, dizruns.com/306 is the original chat, the chat from about a year ago with Andy. And if you want to find out more about what we were just talking about, the mind and the body and the spirit connection, definitely head over to fearlesshealthcoaching.com. There's blog posts there and obviously a lot of information if you're looking at possibly working with somebody like Andy or obviously with Andy. All that information is there as well. So fearlesshealthcoaching.com is the website. Twitter at Andy Farina. Instagram, second_half_Andy, and on Facebook, Andy.Farina, and the number 2. And again, links for everything, dizruns.com/465. Check out the show notes and link and connect with Andy and let him know what you thought about this episode. I think it was another good one. I think we're 2 for 2, Andy, which is pretty good. So we'll take that. And thank you for making the time today. Thanks for joining us and sharing a bit about some of the struggles you had and how you overcame them. Hopefully that's something that can play forward. And like just like you said, you pay it forward now for others to kind of learn from that experience and go forward. So thanks for reconnecting with me, my friend. And maybe let's not wait a whole nother year before we do this again. All right.
Man, I would love to talk any time, Denny. It's been a real privilege and enjoy. I've really enjoyed the time. Thank you so much for inviting me. I hope there's something in all that will, you know, encourage others and help them live their dreams and move forward. And you've done a great job and you're a great host. So thank you so much for having me on the show. I really appreciate it.
Oh, the pleasure is certainly mine. Take care and we'll talk soon.
All right. Take care, Denny. God bless, buddy.
All right, guys. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to today's episode of the show. I hope you enjoyed this second conversation between Andy and myself. And as always, I'd be curious to know what stood out to you from this episode. What were your thoughts? What were your takeaways? Let me know. I'm always interested to hear from you guys. For me, one of the things that Andy said that really just really stood out to me is when he called running kind of a tribal activity. I don't know if it's something that I had ever thought of before, but you know, I mean, he goes on to talk about how we need others and being around other people and just that interaction. And I mean, you know, let's look at it from the online running community perspective. Like, I don't know about you, but I know I get really energized when I'm talking to the people in our Facebook group or just, you know, interacting with other runners on various forms of social media. And of course, being around other runners in person, meeting at group runs, participating in group runs. It really makes sense. And like I said, it's not something that I'd never really thought of in those terms of it being a tribal thing. But I do think that running and that interaction that we get with, you know, being around other folks, there really is something tribal to it, really is something primitive to it that really connects, you know, us together as people, as runners, as you know, the human race, at a very, you know, at our core. And just when Andy mentioned that, it just really, really stood out to me. And I'm really appreciative of the folks that I've been able to share miles with over the course of the years, both, you know, on the podcast and also, you know, together, sweating it out, you know, putting one foot in front of the other on the roads and on the trails. It's truly a joy to be able to do that. And it just, you know, like I said, it's not something I thought of in those terms, but when Andy mentioned it, it was a real big, like, oh yeah, that's definitely it. He's on to something there. So that was my takeaway. What about you? Let me know. Shoot me a tweet at DizRuns. Shoot me an email, DizRuns@gmail.com. Or better yet, you can head to the show notes for this episode. You can find it at DizRuns.com/465. And leave a comment there. And that way other folks can see what you thought of this episode as well. So with that, we'll go ahead and put a little bow on this thing. Thanks again to Ultra for being a participating sponsor in the show, dizruns.com/ultra. If you want to get some new shoes, some new clothes, some apparel, just check out what they have available. And if you do, you know, using that link gives me a little bit of credit for sending you that way, which certainly helps to keep the lights on. So much appreciated to them and to you guys for continuing to support the sponsors of the show. And with that, we'll go ahead and call this thing a day, shall we? Thank you guys for listening. Hope you have a great rest of the day. And until next time, take care of yourselves. And we'll talk soon. See you guys.